Everybody, it's very exciting today. We have multiple guests. It is the first time that we have ever had a person in every time zone in America. Oh, I guess except for Hawaii.
But still, I feel like this is a monumental moment.
We have Eastern, Central, Mountain, and Pacific time with us, which... Ooh. Thank God for a pandemic, I guess, because we're all free. Silver lining. Anyway, everyone, Christina Lauren is with us today. Woo! We are so excited. Yay! Welcome, welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks, you guys.
Are you all
We're so excited to be sheltering in place?
Are you all safe?
Yes and yes.
Good.
Yeah. It's not officially shelter in place in Utah, but... I've been sick for a couple of weeks leading up to this, so it's the same thing.
Hey, would you each introduce yourself just so our listeners can, like, kind of put your voice with your name?
So, I am Christina.
And I am Lauren, and we write together as Christina Lauren.
Welcome to Faded Mates, everybody. I'm Jen Prokop, and this is my intrepid co-host and awesome author and all-around amazing human,
Sarah McLean.
That's me, right? Yeah, that was you.
We're so excited to be here. We're such huge fans of this podcast, so yes. This is really a big honor for us.
You're very good to us. We have talked about your books before, and we are actually, we just recorded one where we are talking about one of your books in the future, so we are bookending all of it with this podcast with you, because you have a new book out this week.
We do. What a crazy time to put a book out in the middle of a global pandemic.
I mean, what is happening?
It's fine. You know what? I think part of me is like, people are reading so much right now, and your books are like pure escapism, and I think it's going to be great. Like, your beautiful series is like one of my favorites, and everyone knows my real favorite is the one where they like get it on all over town, because I love when people bang in public. So
that's all Jen wants. That's all Jen asks for.
Sarah's heard me say this before, that I'm like really afraid that like when society really breaks down, my Kindle will no longer work.
That's a legitimate fear.
Right? Like, that's going to be the real sign.
That's the darkest time.
Nobody has a Kindle on Walking Dead.
Right. And so my most favorite books, I make sure to buy in paper in case.
Okay, that's smart.
This is a smart plan.
In case. Like, I'll never be without Beautiful Bastard and Beautiful Stranger. Listen, I'm not fooling around. Like, if things go south, I'm going to hide in my house till the zombies come for me, and I'm going to read books until that happens.
That is a lot of smut for the apocalypse. I am in favor of this plan.
I mean, but Jen, let's be honest. Like, you wouldn't survive it if the zombies came, so you might as well just read your way out.
Yeah, absolutely.
And neither would I. I would definitely not. I would just be reading. Yeah, I would be reading my way out of it. But I feel like maybe Christina and Lauren would survive the apocalypse.
I don't know. I don't know.
It depends if the zombies run. If they run, Lo will make it. She just has to be faster than me, which she would.
Fair. So tell us a little bit. You have a book out this week called The Honey Don't List. And I'm going to show my absolute sort of lack of intelligence by telling you that when I first saw this book come out, when I first saw the title of this book, I had to ask a friend what the title meant. I was like, I understand this is a play on something, but what is this? And that friend was Sophie Jordan, and she was like, oh, kitten. So I think I'm the only person in the world who did not know what a honey-do list is.
Well, and Sarah, didn't you and I also in a text talk about how cute the cover is because it looks like a heart but also like a bustier? Was that us?
Yes, that was us. It's okay. Adorable. And I want you guys to talk a little bit about it, but I just read it and I love it. I mean, you know I love all your books, but it is a little bit reality TV.
It's a story about... The main characters are two assistants. They work as, Carrie works as an assistant for Mellie Tripp, who is the wife of this famous celebrity couple. She and her husband, Rusty, are home renovation gurus. And James is Rusty's assistant, but sort of by default. He's actually an engineer, and he's been put into the role of assistant and is sort of you know, disgruntled by it. But the Tripp's marriage is on the brink of disaster, but they have just written a book about how to have successful relationships. Mm-hmm. So it's they're going to go on book tour, and it's going to be a mess. So the agent slash PR rep tells Carrie and James that they must go along on the book tour with Melly and Rusty to keep things from falling off the proverbial bus. And so Carrie and James, I think I love them so much. They are definitely opposites attract. He is very much kind of an uptight engineering type. She is very down home girl, very comfortable in her own skin and also laid back. She is a little insecure about her lack of education, especially relative to James. But it's a sweet love story, and they find their way together on this trip.
And it's funny that you guys think that it looks like a bustier, because we, the day that we got the cover, I think it was the day, is the day that Lizzo performed
at the AMAs.
And she had that giant inflatable butt on stage. And we saw that, and we loved her performance so much.
It was so amazing.
And it just reminded us so much of the cover. We were so happy.
Yeah. So we call it the Lizzo butt cover.
It's a really, really beautiful cover. So what I love about the, I love a lot of things about this book. I love the relationships. I especially like the relationship between Melly, the celebrity, and the heroine.
And Carrie.
And, yeah. And Carrie. And I love, I think part of the joy of a Christina Loren book is all of these sort of extra people. But what's interesting is, so we haven't talked about what trope you guys are here to discuss. But this whole book is forced proximity on a book tour with people who are really going through it. And it is like a very intense emotional forced proximity experience for everyone involved. It's like forced proximity with your boss.
Yep.
Which you're like heavily emotional bosses too. Like it's not an easy, these are not easy bosses. And then forced proximity with people who you, with this sort of opposite person, who you sort of have no choice but to work with. To keep your job. And so you're here to talk about forced proximity. And I wonder if we could talk a little bit about what draws you to the trope and like how you think about writing forced proximity.
You know, it's so funny because we don't realize how often we've actually done that trope. We were talking to Amanda Deal from Book Page. She also reviews for Smart Bitches. And we honestly, like, I was going through our bookshelves, and we write forced proximity in a lot of our books. We apparently love to smash our people together and just make them deal with it. And we've done it in a lot of different ways.
If you like a fast start to a book plot wise, you can really like get it going really quickly with forced proximity. I think that's like one of the things that right. really works about it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I mean, would we call the Unhoneymooners forced proximity too?
Oh, absolutely.
Too? Yeah. So this is the thing. I want to talk a little bit. Jen and I were talking about this earlier, but like when we talk about forced proximity, there are so many different layers. Like
yes.
there's Snowden, right? Like, which is nobody's leaving this space. It is literally a fishbowl, this right. whole book. Like we are together, we are forced together. We cannot leave each other. And then there's like the next level, which is, you know, old school historical road trip romance where they stop at the inn for the night and there's only one bed.
Mm-hmm. Only one bed.
Only one bed, which is my favorite trope.
I love it.
Only one bed, right? And then like then there's this kind of forced proximity where like there's more space for them, physical space for them to move around in, but they're still forced together.
Right.
And then there's the Unhoneymooners kind of style where they're forced proximity experience, the forced proximity experiences, you know, on an island, like they can move around, but it still feels like very claustrophobic.
And they chose to be there in that case, right? You
yeah,
know, in
yeah,
both
yeah.
Unhoneymooners and in Roomies, where they're like suddenly roommates and they're strangers.
Oh, yeah. And then there's Roomies. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure.
Mm-hmm. Right. And also, we haven't talked about the version where it's like a work situation. You know, like we were thinking about this theme and sort of like the Hating Game, and you know, they work mm-hmm. together. Their desks face each other. This is a forced proximity by employment. You know,
often we think about the emotional state of the main characters who are going to be in a romantic relationship, but you have added what I think of as being honestly one of the most uncomfortable situations, which is when you're at a table with a couple who's fighting.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's the worst.
And you're like, oh God, what do I do? Like, so to add that like layer of constant, and now not only are they fighting, but somehow you're supposed to be managing it, and yeah. they're your bosses, but not say your children. Uh-huh. So that seems like a real layer of difficulty that you're adding to it.
And it doesn't end there, Jen. Like, it's not like, oh, just dinner. It's like,
shots, right?
It's like a vacation, like a long, like a yeah. long haul. And you know, anybody who's ever been on a book tour knows that's not always the easiest thing in the world.
It's like endless Caesar salad room service.
Exactly.
And also, if they can't manage it, it like could destroy all of them. Right. It's their job. It's their yeah. careers.
It's their livelihood. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, in the first version, we had so much more of Melly and Rusty. It almost was felt like equal billing, and our editor said, you know, this really has to be James and Carrie's story. There's just too much Melly and Rusty in there. And I think part of what she was responding to is just that discomfort of them being miserable so much of the book, you know, like, is this a romance?
Here's the thing, though. I really feel like the only way forced proximity can work, or rather, I guess I should say, it works best when you are dealing with opposites, or when you're dealing with like enemies to lovers in forced proximity, or, you mm-hmm. know, two characters who are just sort of not designed mm-hmm. to be simpatico.
And they have to work through something. It's not that interesting when they're like, eh, you're okay. Like, I can tolerate you.
I respect you a ton. We're fine here.
Your strengths and my strengths are the perfect way for us to solve this problem together.
Listen. We mock it, but it exists out there, ladies.
It does. Like,
friends to lovers snowed in. Who cares?
Yeah. They're like, do you need another marshmallow for your cocoa?
I know. So I think that's part of it. Is this? There is the. I think. Part of why we all love forced proximity so much is because it sort of amps up the conflict. You know, earlier this week, or maybe it was last week, I don't know, what is time? There was a Reddit thread that was going around that was about a man who had, like, I never know if these relationship threads are for real or if it's just, like, fanfic writers, mm-hmm. like, trying to mess with Reddit. But there was a man who had it was like a fake marriage.
Oh, yeah,
like a
yeah.
fake marriage story.
I remember that one.
And then he was like, and now I'm falling for my husband. And then he was like, and now we're quarantined and it's coming out. Like, I can't keep it bottled in anymore. And then there's this added layer of a familial dynamic in that story. But what is really interesting about that story, for me, one of the big pieces was this, like, that it was all coming to head because now they're in forced proximity. They can't leave each other.
And they're the only people they're seeing. It's like there's no one else there for them to sort of interact with, so they're having to face, you know, all of these feelings of being like quarantined and all of the stress of that. This is the person that you're going to. I mean, I think that just like sparks stuff too.
I do wonder how quarantine life is gonna change, is gonna inspire forced proximity in real life.
Yeah.
Like, I have a feeling there are gonna be a lot of roommate relationships that come out of this.
Interesting.
Oh, yeah.
But maybe also divorces.
Or marriage in trouble, too.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would say the best thread I saw is one guy is like, everyone's predicting a baby boom from nine months from now, but all of those are going to be first children.
Mo and I, our big thing is just like, can someone else wash a dish?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it does feel like now we're all here and like everybody should be able to keep their house a little cleaner and like a little more organized. And it just feels like it's just a mess.
I just want to know who's using all these dishes.
I know.
Yeah. I feel like I've really had to face up to some of my own, like, Like, I don't know how I was, like, I guess socialized as a woman, because I found myself kind of like doing all the cooking. And then I was like, what the hell am I doing? Like, we're all home. Yeah. I normally cook during school because I come home hours before my husband every day. And I was like, look, we're all home.
Yeah.
And so I was like, hey,
turns.
Yeah. So, but it was like kind of me just like going into like, so I do, I feel like I've seen a lot of that where people post threads and, you know, we're all just really facing, I think, a lot of the ways like our marriages work, our relationships with our kids and our friendships, because the quarantine dynamic does change everything.
Yeah.
We're living it all in real life.
We are. I know.
Yeah.
I'm proud of my kids. I'm proud of my marriage. I think we're surviving it well. Granted, we're only, you know, what, 2 weeks in now.
Yeah.
And we just got notification that schools are closed at least until May 1st. So, wow. I mean, it's not a surprise, you know.
You're in California, so, I mean, what? How many more weeks of school is that after May 1st?
It would be another four and a half or five, because we get out early June.
Yeah.
But I mean, I feel like we're behind the East Coast right now in terms of the epidemic, the pandemic. So like I worry that it's going to get really bad in a couple weeks.
Well, we are recording this 2 weeks ago.
Right.
We're recording this 2 weeks in the past. Hello, future. We hope you're still here. Yeah. And there's this, I think what's so shocking about this is just this sense of like, what even will the world be 2 weeks from now? But I wonder about, I feel like forced proximity, where, you know, Jen and I are constantly like trying to predict, well, what will come of this? And, you know, we've talked a lot about whether paranormal will come back in this, because paranormal came so hard after 9/11. But it does feel to me like forced proximity is a natural extension of this, but maybe in a more intense way, mm-hmm. Than we see it in things like, you know, delightful Christina Lauren books.
I mean, do you think people will write these scenarios in books?
I don't know.
I've got to say, how can you fall in love with someone you can't? I mean, I guess there can just be long scenes of FaceTime dating.
Oh my God.
Like, you know, when I started, I'm 1,000 years old, and I like just like for a heartbeat, I internet dated. But in those like early internet dating years, it wasn't really like it is now, where it's like an intent, like you sort of instantly go out and meet someone. Mm-hmm. Like there was a lot of email that went back and forth before you met someone. And maybe that's what's going to happen now. Like maybe people will learn, you know, one of the things that we've talked about is this sort of immediacy of online dating now, like mm-hmm. in a Tinder world, like how can you possibly like court?
It's going to be like a Love is Blind / quarantine crossover idea.
Yeah. Which is kind of hot. Like I'm sort of here for it.
When we were writing My Favorite Half Night Stand, I remember we were talking to one of our friends, and I had said something about like by date 5 or something they were going to go out, and she was like, are you kidding? No, you go out as soon as like you just want like one, you know, email thing, and you guys agree to meet up. And now it's like, well, what are you going to do? Like,
I mean, I kind of love it.
Endless pining letters.
I hope you're all out there like getting courted by in text. I really mm-hmm. do. That's what we all deserve. That's what you all deserve.
I agree.
Like full like love letter style courtship.
There's something to be said for being able to express yourself carefully and clearly for a while before you're an idiot in person. I think it gains you a lot of like benefit of the doubt later.
And phones. So my relationship with my husband, I've told this story on the podcast, but like we met at a wedding in California and then I moved back to New York City, and our entire relationship was through an instant messenger competitor called ICQ, and then by phone for like months before he moved to New York. And we had seen each other like twice during this time.
Wow.
And like long late night phone calls upon which I would fall asleep because I was 3 hours ahead of him. Like those are such a like cornerstone of our relationship that I'm sort of like, that's fine. You can all just talk by phone until you fall asleep.
Yeah. I wonder if what won't happen is that like, we'll get a lot of stories that like start with like somehow we met during the quarantine, but then really quickly sort of like come out into like what looks like a pretty regular future. So it'll like sort of set the stage for this happened, but not really fully like live in it happening.
That brings me to, so I'm going to start, I'm going to recommend a book.
Okay.
That's what we're here for. Cause that is exactly the setup for, I'm actually recommending, as usual, I'm going to cheat and recommend more than one book, but in a roundabout sort of sneaky way, because I want to recommend the Billionaire series, the Blackout Billionaire series by Naima Simone. So Naima, we've talked before about how much I love Naima's series. My favorite of her series is the her football series, the WAGS series. But she recently wrote a book for wrote a series for Harlequin Desire line, the Harlequin Desire line, and it is three books that all begin during a blackout. So there's a part, like an elaborate sort of gala event, a party, and there's a blackout, and these couples are all kind of stuck together. They're forced into proximity for an evening while the city is in a blackout. And the first one is like a secret, like an accidental, like in the dark makeout session.
I loved it. It was great.
It's good. That's the billionaire's bargain. And then she discovers like it's her ex-husband's best friend who she's had this like makeout session with.
Oh my God. This sounds like my crack.
Yeah, the second one is called, oh God, now I'm drawing a blank on what the second one's called, but it's a fake girl, like it's basically a one-night stand where the heroine has a one-night stand with her brother's, like, biggest enemy, and then they, like, he sort of convinces her into this kind of, like, fake girlfriend setup. And then the third one is called Blame It on the Billionaire, and that one's my favorite one, and has a curvy heroine, and they have a one-night stand, too, in this blackout, because why not? It's a blackout. Everybody's just boning.
What else do you do?
I know, right?
And then that ends up to be that ends up being like a true fake engagement story, because his parents are like, what are you doing with your life? You need a wife. And they're all billionaires and like in their early 30s. And so, which, you know, tracks.
Right.
And
absolutely. I was there in my early 30s.
And so, and it's this like delightful, it's such a nonsense setup. I love it. Like this kind of everyone, we're, oh, the lights are out. We're all going
to
just.
Time to bone.
I think this is a brilliant premise and I love it.
Me too. And I read these books back to back to back in like a day. And I was like, these are delightful. So if you guys are looking for something that's just like light and frothy and super fun and really escapist, but also has that kind of like, you know, the category we talked about this on the category interstitial we did, but a kind of straight shot of like kind of bananas conflict, but you're with it and super tropey. This is the series for you.
I have written it down. I'm excited. I feel like I can't get enough books lately, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like, I'm into it. I like the premise of everybody banging as soon as the lights go out. I need that to be its own trope category.
Yes. This is what romance is for.
Exactly. I lived through the blackout in New York City, the great blackout of like 2004 in New York City.
Right.
And I was trying to remember as I was doing it, like, did we just all go inside and bone? And then I realized, no, it was the dead of summer. So we all went outside and like sat on our front stoops and like just like tried really hard not to die of heat stroke.
Oh, that sounds miserable.
That was the one where it was like some field in Ohio, right? Where like a transformer blew or something. And
oh,
like,
I don't know.
Well, I think this is the one. I'll look it up. And if that's the case, it's right near where my mom lives. Like we were driving and she's like, that's where the transformer blew that like took down New York City. And I was like, Mom, we're in fucking like in between Cleveland and Akron. What?
That's amazing.
I'll look it up.
And sort of terrifying that like a single transformer in Ohio could. It's like the butterfly effect, but the Ohio effect. So what about you guys? What do you have for us?
Okay. Well, this is Lauren. This is really hard because I feel like I realized so many of my favorite books over time have been forced proximity. So, the first one that my mind went to is Rafe, but you guys have already spoken at length about Rafe by Rebecca Weatherspoon, which is an amazing, amazing book.
And that's like the workplace forced proximity because
he's her nanny. Right. She also wrote Haven, which is like in a cabin forced proximity. And I do want to just give a shout out to The Bride Test, because I feel like that's a really interesting situational forced proximity where she comes over and from another country and she's living at his house. But the one that is in my heart and I love so much is the Fever series.
Oh,
and I don't know if you guys have read this. It's Karen Marie Moaning, years and years and years ago.
We have not talked about Karen Marie Moaning.
We never have. I just started the first one recently, like, and sort of said on Twitter, like, oh, I'm reading this for the first time. And someone was like, look, give me your fucking romance card. I was like, sorry.
I haven't read them. And when I tell people I haven't read them, they get like super offended.
Wait, can I tell you, like, when I was in, I think it was like talking to a bunch of English teachers one day, and you know, you play this game where like, what have you not read? Right? And someone's like, I haven't read Hamlet. And everyone's like, get out of here. And I feel like there's like a romance game to be played here where you like admit, you know, I've never read, and then you say somebody huge. That's kind of how the Karen Marie Moaning thing went down for me in real time.
So, Lauren, tell us about Fever.
So, I read the series years ago, and it's one of those series that I come back to and I read every now and then because it's so cracky. It's basically, the premise is that the main character, Michaela Lane, her sister has died, been murdered sort of brutally, and she goes to Ireland, specifically Dublin, to track down the killer, and turns out that Dublin is not at all what she thought. There's this whole world of fairies and fae that are real, and she turns out to have a power that she can see the fae even when they're wearing a glamour, and she meets Jericho Barons, and he's super hot, and they end up together all the time, and it's just like, it builds over several books. And the tension on the page is so good.
I love that trope where, like, no one can see him except her.
Yeah.
Like, I love any trope where everything is true. It is true for everyone except one person.
Yeah. Yeah. You love that idea.
He is poison to everyone but her. It's my favorite Cressley Cole book.
No. And it's also, I mean, so I have only read, like, honestly, part of book one. And it's really interesting, too, because she seems to be someone who's, like, going to experience a lot of personal growth through this series, right?
She will.
She's
yes.
Like kind of naive
and really irritating at first,
which is when I'd stopped reading.
And he's the kind of one who like understands everything. So there's also a little bit of a, like, what's that trope where like, she has to learn everything at the feet of the master. Only the master has like a really amazing, like sexual magnetic love force for her too.
I don't know, but I like it.
It's good.
Yeah. And they, you could tell that she drives him crazy, and they're very different. And it, like, the world that's built is just, it's really amazing. The world building.
So, and then the forced proximity comes in. So he lives with them?
Well, so he owns a bookstore.
Oh.
And so, yeah.
Hero.
And, yeah, the hero.
No, I mean, he is a hero for owning a bookstore.
Oh. I was like, yes, the hero owns a bookstore. But yeah, and so they are together a lot in that. And I can't, Jen, remind me, I don't know if you're far enough into it yet. Does she stay in the bookstore? I know in some of the books.
Yeah, because someone, essentially she was staying in her sister's apartment, but then once the Fae figure out that she can, not only that she can see them, but she can sort of like freeze them. Like,
yeah.
She's like some sort of super fae hunter kind of skills that she's like never been trained in and doesn't really know what they are. And so then she has to kind of move into the bookstore's like back room because he's like, you're gonna get yourself killed. And she's like, no, I can freeze them. And he's like,
honey,
they've just figured that out. You're a dummy.
I mean, there's some stuff in this series that I think would maybe be seen as problematic now. I mean, I'm not throwing a stone because that's certainly true with Beautiful Bastard, but like, I think.
And I love it. Stop.
Hey, listen.
We all like problematic stuff.
There is no problematic shaming on this. As long as you acknowledge it, it's fine.
Yeah, there's definitely some stuff, especially in later books, where he, I'm not going to give it away. It would be a huge spoiler, but it's so great and so cracky. I love it. Like the build of the relationship over books is so carefully done.
So yes, this is a read alike. This is, if you like the Ilona Andrews books, if you are really like an urban fantasy fan,
mm-hmm. right.
and you're willing to stick with a romance over multiple books, this is a great choice.
For sure. Don't expect banging on page one or 100 or
book one or two or three. I actually had to inquire. I was like, look, when are these two going to bang?
Oh, really?
It's book four, everybody. I just want you to know I did my due diligence.
Christina's like, I'm out.
She's like, closes tab.
Alice Clayton loves these books. And she'll just start talking about Baron sometimes. And I'll be like, oh, yeah, I haven't read that. And she just takes it as such like a personal insult.
And you were like, book four. They don't bang until book four. Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Well, your answer before was always like, well, I don't have the time. And now, honey, you have the time.
It's true.
I think that's a great choice. And I'm actually really glad because we don't talk about urban fantasy very much on the podcast because I don't read it. So, yay. I'm really glad.
I also think the forced proximity, that one also is like the fact that she's dragged into a world she doesn't understand.
Totally.
Right? So there's like no exit ramps for her out of that world.
She's dependent on him.
Both
for shelter, but also for information. I mean, she is completely flying blind. She doesn't know this world at all.
She's literally like taking notes in a notebook. It's wild. Yeah. So that's the part too, is in this case, it's like forced proximity, but there's like no turning back. Mm-hmm. Like this mm-hmm. is your life now.
Right.
And so I think it really works on this level. Cause even though she is kind of annoying, you can see her clinging to like, this is what I know. And it's not working for me anymore. And I can't figure out why.
What about you, Christina?
It's funny because when I was going through my books, I was looking at like very literal interpretations of like forced proximity. Because, you know, when Lo and I were talking, we were like, things like divergent. And you know what I mean? Those are all forced proximity because they're like...
And like Hunger Games.
They're trapped in a situation.
Yeah, of course.
And then I think we were talking about like Rebecca Weatherspoon's new book, The Cowboy to Remember, How She Has Amnesia. I was like, is that considered proximity? Because you're sort of like, you're still kind of stuck, you know, you have to interact with somebody because they have something you need or, you know, whatever. But this one felt very fitting because, and it's the like cabin in the snow. Lord Dashwood Missed Out by Tessa Dare because she is supposed to go on a writing thing. She's supposed to go to a writing engagement.
We're supposed to go on book tour.
We're supposed to be flying home from our book tour today. So this just felt sort of fitting. So I'm the worst at summary. So let's see how I do. So this is about Nora Browning, and she is in love with Lord Dashwood, who is George Travers. And she's in love with him when she's young, and he leaves her to like go off. I can't remember if it's like into the Navy or go sail some ships. I forget exactly what it is. And she sort of, her heart is broken. She writes this sort of tell-all book. She's supposed to go to this speaking engagement, and she's supposed to get on a coach to go speak at this library for the other people in the rest of the series. And the bridge goes out. There's a problem with the carriage. And he also happens to be, you know, the only other person in the coach with her. Then there's a huge snowstorm and they're stuck in a cabin and things happen. And I will say one of the things that is a little bit hard is that you find, I mean, I don't know, I guess this isn't a huge, like a very long book, so it's not going to spoil too much. You find out that he sort of orchestrated some of the circumstances to get them alone together, which isn't the best.
But once they're trapped together and the person finds out, that can be real good.
Yes.
And does it end with them in love? It's fine.
Yes, of course it does. You know, but there's like trying to rip corsets and, you know, so it just felt very fitting right now.
I love that. And you know what's interesting? So that's a novella. It's a Spindle Cove novella. Mm-hmm. And I'm, first of all, I'm really glad that you picked it because historicals, I feel like historicals kind of shine in this forced proximity world. And especially with things like a snowstorm, which would kind of lock you into a house for weeks and weeks at a time.
And it's a good excuse to break the rules.
What if there's not a wheelwright available? Like, what the fuck? I like read the book lately with a wheelwright, and I was like, that's like a job, a wheelwright.
Yeah. Okay,
anyway,
you better have one in town, or else you're stuck with your hot guy for weeks.
The snow broke your wheel.
So, but I also feel like novellas really do. I feel like the forced proximity novella is basically like, I mean, there must be more of those than every other kind of novella.
It's a sweet spot, too, because you don't have to spend too much time in whatever the proximity situation is.
Right.
Like, you don't get to the point where the reader's like, good Lord, just get in a bus and go home, you know?
Call somebody.
Get the wheelwright.
But, like, one of the things that's really bothering me right now about indie romance, and I'm speaking to all of you who are doing these incredible, like, sexy anthologies, is they're up for, you know, 2 months or 3 months, and then they get pulled down, and then a bunch of you aren't putting the stories back up. So, like, today I was going through my list of like favorite forced proximity stories, and most of them are not available anymore. I'm looking at you, Tracy Livesey. You have a great one from Reindeer Games. Sierra Simone, we talked about the one with the bear on our Christmas episode.
The one with the bear.
It's not a real bear. I mean, it's like a real bear, if you know what I mean. Sophie Jordan has one where an American woman is stuck with like this like brutish Scotsman in a cabin in Scotland. It's just not, but you can't get it. So I'm teasing all of you with all of these.
With all these things that are not available.
I would like you all to get on Twitter and just shame these authors into putting them back online so that we can buy these books again. Anyway, yes. But I do think like the novella, like this is really the sweet spot of the holiday novella too, like
for sure.
Forced proximity in a snowstorm.
Yes.
But I'm talking about snowstorms, Jen.
I appreciate what you're doing because I'm going to talk about Whiteout by Adriana Anders, which is, I am not even kidding you, the most intense forced proximity story, because it's like a lot of forced proximity is like they get inside somewhere and they're safe. But in this book, Angel and Ford are in Antarctica. On Antarctica? I don't even know the proper preposition.
They're in the snow.
And so what happens is he's a researcher, she's a cook at like essentially like there's a couple of different research stations that are run by different countries. A lot of them though are pretty the people there, it's like, you know, so the funding is very international. So there's like a real big, you know, kind of conglomeration of people. And at the end of Antarctica's summer, most of the people will leave, leaving a group of people to sort of winter over who just decide to stay to continue to work on their research.
I love this already.
Oh my God, it is so intense. And then what happens is, so the plane comes to like lift out everybody, and Ford is on the winter crew, and Angel is supposed to be leaving for the summer, or, you know, leaving. That like her tour on sort of in Antarctica is done. And what happens is a team of assassins comes and they kill a bunch of the researchers. Angel sees it happening and hides. Ford is kind of out in the snow and then everybody else like takes off and is gone, and she's left there hiding. And he comes back and realizes that they didn't get what they wanted, which is, this is the powerful irony of this moment, which is he's found in some ice core samples a virus that can be weaponized, and he knows it has to be protected, but he's pretty sure these folks are going to come back. So Angel and Ford put a bunch of food on like a sled, and they're going to essentially like snowshoe or ski or whatever out of there to the other station and hope essentially to like get help at the other station. So it's like supercharged forced proximity. And the best part about it is I don't know if I've ever read a romance like romantic suspense that was this suspenseful. Mm-hmm. If I did not know there was going to be an HEA at the end, I'm not sure I would have been able to do it. Right. Like the promise of the HEA, I was like, it's going to work out. It's going to work out. And they just get really close. And I'm like, so I'm texting Sarah. I'm like, yeah, but where are they going to danger bang?
On the sled.
Trademark.
It's instant snow bite. No, what's it? Frostbite or whatever. Yeah. Yeah. Like,
but is it, where do they danger bang, Jen?
Okay. On you have to the way there. In. They find a little like cabin. I don't even know. Whatever. Sure. Like
an Antarctica cabin.
It's like for the scientists when they have to retreat and they get in there and there's canned food and a bed and they danger bang and it's amazing.
There's a bed.
There's shelter in place.
Yeah, no one cares. It's just like, yes, romance, that works out well.
I literally just bought this. Like as you were talking.
Romance is the best.
It's like I just... This is like, I should imagine like Dennis Quaid in this movie or something.
It's, you guys, here's how good this book is. There are very few books my husband is not really a big reader and he thinks my whole romance life is just like too wild to be believed. But every once in a while, I'm like, okay, but like this one. And he's like, wait, what's a danger bang? And I was like, Daryl,
sir.
Don't you intuitively know? And he was like, yes, but it was amazing. He has not read it yet, but when he's ready, I'm going to be like, you should read this book. It's so good.
Oh, it's unavailable.
I'm like, why is this not on TV? I would watch this. Although the virus part might feel a little too real
right
now.
Part does feel very real right now. Yeah.
But some people are looking for virus books right now. So
you know what? I've watched all the movies and they're oddly comforting. I can't explain why.
Your Why Outbreak is the top movie on iTunes right now.
I absolutely am. Contagion. I could not even watch Contagion before this. And then like day two of quarantine, I was like, we're going to watch Contagion. And I was like, this is great.
Because I think you want to know that people can survive it.
Totally.
I mean, I get it, right? I totally get it. Yeah. And I think that the other thing I really liked about this one is the bad guys are basically like American pharmaceutical companies.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I mean, that makes sense.
And that feels very real, too.
Yes, it does.
I also want to shout out the old school boat romances, all the pirate romances where the heroine was like stuck on a boat with the hero who was also an awful pirate, but also very well bathed.
Strangely well bathed.
You know, no one ever has scurvy ever. Reasons.
All the teeth are very straight. No, everyone's had a bath.
Breath is totally fine.
This reminds me of when I was young. So I started reading romance because my mom was such a huge reader. She would go to the used bookstore and we just had bookcases and bookcases. And her thing was cowboy romances. And one of the things I loved so much was like down on her luck girl goes to a ranch in Montana and like gets a job as like in the kitchen or you know what I mean? And,
yes.
And so she's kind of stuck on this ranch and then, you know, a calf has to be born in the middle of the night. And
yes. You know what I loved about those? The cowboy is always like, you cannot handle the isolation of my windswept ranch of the plains. And she's like, no, my inner fortitude is so strong.
Yes.
Like I am the perfect woman for this ranch of desolation.
Yes. My God.
Ranch of Desolation would be a great romance novel. Somebody
I would read it.
And then because I know you guys are Cressley Cole fans,
yes,
as are so many of our listeners, I got to shout out Dark Needs at Night's Edge.
Yes.
My sweet, sweet boy, Conrad, tied to a radiator.
I love
Cressley's,
him.
Cressley's most beta hero.
Such a beta boy. I love him so much.
And his ghost love. Actually, if you've never read IAD, Jen and I were just talking about how we're going to do a recap episode just to bring the new listeners of Fated Mates to IAD, in case you haven't gone back. But Dark Needs at Night's Edge is one of those books that I believe that you can start IAD with. You could jump in there.
I think you can start with any of them. I think I actually started, I started from the beginning because I didn't start reading them until we were on the bus tour with her. And I was like, what is this Cressley Cole person up to? She's pretty great. And then I just like could not stop. But No Rest for the Wicked is just like my obsession. I love that one so much.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, it's funny you guys also mentioned YA. One of the books my kids are reading this week is called The Final Six, where it's like, you know, the Earth has been all fucked up and they are going to send six teenagers to make a new human settlement on one of Jupiter's moons.
Oof.
Oh,
and I was like, I wonder what's going to go wrong. It is intense. My kids love it.
Everything.
So,
everything is going to go wrong.
I've seen The Martian. I know. Force proximity by yourself, though, not so fun.
Fun fact about The Martian. So I have this conflict workshop that I give to romance, mostly to romance writers. And so I spend lots of time talking about like how to build internal and external conflict in romance novels. But every once in a while, I get asked to give it to like a group of people who aren't necessarily entirely romance people. And so instead of talking about, you know, Dreaming of You or, you know, a Christina Lauren novel, I end up talking about The Martian. That's my go-to, like how to build intense emotional conflict and write a romance, a proper romance between Matt Damon and the planet Mars.
You know, that's a great example, though, because
it's enemies to lovers.
Our favorite. It's super intense, though, and it's just him, right? So, like that movie is very stressful, and it's like, wow, that's impressive. We sat next to him on a panel, and
that's awesome. The author or Matt Damon?
Oh, the author. Sorry,
I was like, wait, and you're like, why are we on a panel? I'm like, you really like dropped that so casually. I was like, wait, tell me more.
No, I have to tell you that we were like, we had no idea like why we were in there. We were just like happy to be sitting at the table. It was like all these important people with us.
There's people that had their films made and or their stuff adapted to TV shows, and then we had like written a draft of a pilot. We're like, I don't know why we're here.
Said that when it was our turn. I think I actually was like, we're just happy to be here.
Yeah. It's like Lev Grossman and James S. A. Corey and Andy Weir, and it was moderated by what's the guy who wrote the Ready Player One, Ernie Cline.
Wow, that sounds so cool.
Yeah, now you're like, why were you there? As were we.
I think everyone deserved to see you there. You know, I do have one more prediction. I actually think we're going to see a lot more books like Adriana's where it's like person versus nature. Mm. Because I do think that like conflict that where like the bad guy is something, right? Like they have to work together to survive rather than defeat can sometimes be a good for romance.
Oh, I hope so.
I agree. I also think we'll see a lot of people bursting out and going on adventures and finding romance there. I could see people writing a lot of like, I am free.
Time to watch Romancing the Stone again, everyone.
Oh my God. That is gold.
Well, this is amazing. Christina Lauren, tell everyone where they can find you.
Well, you can find us on social media. Our Twitter is at Christina Lauren, as is our Instagram, and our Facebook is Christina Lauren Books. And our books can be found wherever books are sold. So, thank you.
And the new book is called The Honey Don't List.
Yes, ma'am.
And it is out. It has been out for 2 weeks, but you can find it at lots and lots of independent booksellers, many of which are still open for business. They are shipping. A lot of them are waiving shipping fees still. Are you guys able to, is there a place where you are able to send, or people are able to buy signed books?
We are sending signed book plates to the Books A Million stores in Alabama. I know it's a random selection, but that's where we were going to be on tour. So I would definitely buy from those stores. The Huntsville one I know is going to have some. And also just a little plug for the audiobooks. The audiobook is read by Patty Mirren, who was Anna on Frozen Broadway.
Ooh.
And she's amazing. And then the James character is read by John Root, who's actually, he's an actor. He does a lot of voice acting, and he is the husband of our agent, Holly Root. And he is amazing. And so I would really love for people to check out the audiobook. You can get it on Libro FM, which helps support independent bookstores. And it is really a fantastic audiobook.
And also for a lot of people that are struggling to read, listening to a great audiobook can be one way to like keep reading while you're like, right, if you're just having trouble focusing. I found myself listening to a lot more audiobooks in the past couple weeks.
Same. Yeah, same.
Well, thank you both so much for joining us.
Thank you, too.
Thank you.
We just adore you so much. We're so glad that we got to be here.
Everyone, this is Faded Mates. We are thinking of all of you. We hope that you're being safe and you're washing your hands and not touching your face holes. You can leave us a voicemail message, as always, with a book that blooded you. And we will play those voicemail messages at the end of every episode. That number is 646-450-3766. If you want Faded Mates merch, you can find it at fadedmates.net and just click on the merch button. We are produced by Eric Mortensen, and we love you all a whole lot.
Hi, this is Sarah. I am a PhD candidate, so all of my reading is either really boring social theory or ridiculous romances. The book that blooded me was A Year and a Day by Virginia Henley, and it was written, I think, in the late 90s, and I must have read it when I was like 11 or 12 years old. I borrowed it from one of my best friends at the time who lived in my neighborhood, and she was like, you know, there's love and sex in this book, and it was very scandalous. It's bananas. I think it starts and the heroine has like a weird dream sequence sexual encounter with a literal lynx, and of course the hero's name is Lynx. I think it's Lincoln, but there's a lot of history. Like Robert the Bruce is a character. It's all about feudalism, and there's political intrigue, and I don't remember if it was good, but I do know that it started me on a, you know, long journey of reading as much romance as I can. All right, thank you too so much. I am in a new city doing research, and I don't know many people here, and listening to your podcast every week makes me feel like I have friends. So thanks for that. Bye-bye.